Folks, we have reached that time on a Thursday. Let's get our view from the north. Covering many, many things as he's now back at the Oregonian. You can follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things going with you and yours this week?
Busy, 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 man. Man, all sorts of craziness going on with the draft and free agency in the NBA and the Duckies. And yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, they're making us work for a living again. I don't remember signing up for this. So, NBA draft. I mean, you were at the Final Four 3.5 years ago. Pritchard was a starter, but you know, on that team, you had Bell, Dorsey, Brooks, Boucher, a lot of NBA players. So, just to see a guy like this from the state, staying 4 years, obviously worked his butt off to get better and better to end up a first rounder with a storied franchise. I mean, you're a journalist. That's just a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, especially when you consider, like, halfway through his junior year, everyone was like, what the heck's going on with Peyton Pritchard? He was supposed to be carrying this team moving forward and be the guy after being a freshman on that Final Four team, and he regressed wildly. Like, it was crazy. Everyone was talking about it on Talking Ducks. Like, what is going on with this guy? And then all of a sudden, he clicked, like, it went off, and, you know, they made a nice tournament run, and then he got even better his senior year. He was Player of the Year, All-American. You know, the biggest question mark for him is, you know, athleticism at that level. He's not a non-athlete, but he's obviously not an elite athlete in terms of quickness or speed, but he's extremely skilled and he's smart. And sometimes the athleticism, I think, is a little bit overrated. Like, I think it's important, don't get me wrong, because it does allow you to do certain things, but you have to have skill to go with it. Otherwise, you're just, you know, a decathlete. happens to play basketball. So what he lacks in elite-level athleticism, he makes up for with a lot of, you know, great skills in terms of dribbling, in terms of smarts, and, of course, in terms of being able to shoot. I'm not surprised he was a late first-round pick based on some of the mock drafts I saw going in, but I would say probably last spring, I still probably didn't peg him as a late first-round pick. I thought he'd be more like an early to mid-second-rounder, so he definitely has eclipsed where I envisioned him going. But I think it's kind of funny that he went to Boston. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting with my son, and we're watching the draft, and Boston's up. And they go, and then the commissioner, you know, Boston Celtics select, and I go, Peyton Pritchard. And then he said, Peyton Pritchard. My son looked at me funny. I go, but here's the thing. The reason why I said that is because at that very second, when Boston Celtics were on the clock, I thought of Danny Ainge. And I thought of Danny Ainge being, you know, a former star from Oregon, North Eugene, which is a three-sport star, and played basketball. And then I'm just thinking of Peyton Pritchard, the, you know, a megastar from the state of Oregon. I was like, it wasn't like a prediction. It was more like I just felt this weird little thing because of that connection. And even Ainge himself in his press conference said, you know, he kind of jokingly said, I think it was only partially jokingly saying, you know, maybe it's that Oregon connection, but I've always had my eye on this guy. You know, I've been watching him for a long time. I tend to find myself on the West Coast more often than usual, going to the Pac-12 tournament 2 years ago, and then, you know, heading out to Eugene and then just watch them. So I do think that, you know, I don't think Danny Ainge is going to pick an Oregon kid over a kid from South Carolina just because he's from Oregon. I think the guy has to have the goods. But I do think there was some little nostalgia in him that went into that pick, that he felt like he was kind of maybe reaching back to the 70s and picking himself.
Well, I hope Pritch does well. I'm happy for him. I'm a Knicks fan. I ain't rooting for the Celtics. No way, no how.
You just can't do it?
No way. As for the Blazers, so in essence, they used their first rounder Monday to get Robert Covington from Houston. And I guess if you filled out the needs checklist, frontline defense, I saw you were talking with Joe Freeman, who's covered the Blazers for like a million years. What's the word on what Covington brings to the table?
You know, it's a savvy get, I think. You know, he's not the superstar, you know, or all-star that they need, I think, to contend. You know, I kind of said in my video with Joe, I was like, you know, to me, the ideal kind of guy is Paul George. The 3-and-D guy at small forward, position of need, gives you some length, athleticism, can do it all. Covington can do the three-point shooting part, and he can play defense not quite as well as George, I would say, because George is, I think, 5- or 6-time all-defensive player, or 4-time or something like that. But he gives you the D and the three and the D that Paul George gives you, but he's not great off the dribble. He's not going to, you know, take people off the dribble and make, you know, special moves in the paint and spin on people and score and create his own shot. And he's not a very good mid-range scorer. And he just doesn't handle the ball well. He's not much of a playmaker. He's not going to set up other people.
Right.
So it sort of defines the difference between what an all-star caliber guy like Paul George is and then what someone like Covington is, who's sort of a role player who has some speciality, so to speak. But those specialities he has is exactly what Portland needs. They need more attitude and toughness and length on defense. He's going to give them that. He can defend the 2, 3, and 4 really well. He played center. There's video of him I posted in one of my articles of him, you know, blocking 3 of Rudy Gobert's shots in one game. And one, he pinned it against his hand, never got out of his hands, ended up being a jump ball. He did the same thing to 7'3 Porzingis. So this is a 6'7", 6'8 guy who's blocking, you know, 7-footer shots. So he's a, you know, he's a rim protector. He's a pretty good on-ball defender. He's a really good weak side help defender. He plays passing lanes. So they needed that. And then the fact that he's going to be a guy who, you know, if he's open, like, he's not going to create his own 3-point shot necessarily, but if he's open, you kick it out to him, he's going to drill it. And that's what they needed, and that's what they got.
No, I think he becomes their best all-around defender. So,
definitely.
Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, you get a sense this was phase one of what Neil O'Shea might have up his sleeve. You know, what's the buzz about? All right, so what's next?
Yeah, you know, so the Robbie Hood thing's kind of interesting because he opted out, but Joe and I kind of agree that he may have opted out to re-sign in. Like, I sort of wondered that initially, did he opt out because, well, now he's not going to start because Covington's going to start. But I don't think that's a guarantee that Covington's going to start at 3. He could start at 4 and play with Zach Collins if Zach Collins is to get his act together. Then the best lineup might be him at the 4 and then Hood at the 3. So I sort of think, and Joe said this too, that it may be a situation where they said, hey, look, opt out, and we'll sign you to a long-term deal, which I think would be ideal for both, because he was really coming into his own for Portland. If they do that, they're still going to have a mid-level exception and then another exception that came, a 2-way exception, something. It's like 3 different exceptions. And so the mid-level is going to give them a starting salary of $9 million. I think it's going to be in 4 years, $39 million, that they can actually chop up and spread out. Some of the names, you know, being bounced around out there, Paul Millsap is one who's rumored to be in their crosshairs. He would actually give them, I think they're still high on Zach Collins, so it'd be interesting to see what happens. I think if you sign Millsap, I think you almost have to start him because he's just so much more polished and better than Zach, and then bring Zach off the bench at the 4 and the 5. But, you know, he's 35, but man, he can still play. He played well last year, he can shoot. And that's what you need, more shooters. You need shooters around Dame and CJ, and that's what they're getting. So he's a name that's been out there. And then, you know, Crowder's another name that's sort of been rumored around, a defensive on-ball defender who can also hit the outside shot. And if they can come away with one of those two guys and then maybe someone else, a Josh Jackson or something like that, to me, adding Covington plus one other vet who is a grown man and can shoot the 3, that just changes the dynamic of this team, because I've never viewed the Blazers as being tough. You know, they haven't been tough. You had Crowder with Covington, now you're tougher. You're just more physically imposing from a perimeter defense standpoint, and that would help Dame and CJ an awful lot.
Yeah, and how weird is it that, okay, draft's over, season starts in 4 weeks.
I know. That hit me like a ton of bricks, man. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Well, so your Bulls went with Patrick Williams from Florida State, 4th overall, and I'm guessing that a lot of people who didn't know a lot about him went online and said, wait a minute, this guy doesn't start. He scores 9 points a game, but I saw one writer compare him to, like, Taj Gibson or Jeff Green. You know, he's a 3, and they call it a small ball 4. But, you know, he was an ACC all-freshman. He's a big-time defender. So, as a Bulls fan, what'd you make of this one?
I don't know what to make of it, man. I spent all my time looking up James Wiseman, Annie Edwards, LaMelo Ball, even Okoro. I looked into Killian Hayes, Obi Toppin, who went to your team,
yep,
and Tyrese Halliburton, like, were the guys that I thought were supposed to be in that range that everyone was talking about the Bulls might pick. Literally, and then the kid from Europe, from
Israel,
Denny Adjei guy, or whatever.
Yeah,
I was not high on him. He bothered me, so I'm glad I didn't get him. But yeah, and then all of a sudden, this Patrick Williams character, who I saw on mock drafts everywhere from like 8 to like 20. And of course, you know, I've always said mock drafts are for entertainment purposes only. But they do give you usually a guy, right? There's usually some kind of rhyme or reason to it. But that was bizarre. And then they take him, and of course, by the way, I'm scrambling. I'm trying to learn more about this guy that I kind of ignored. I mean, he's intriguing. Like, he's 6'8", 225, he's a big, strong, physical kid. He can shoot. He can play D, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt with a new GM and everything like that. He's definitely intriguing, like I said. But he just wanted to feel like, man, we got a dude, not, okay, let's see what happens at number four. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You, at four, you're thinking impact player, not project.
Right, exactly. Who knows? He could be the best player in the draft. I remember when Jason Tatum went third, you know, everyone was wondering if Philly had made a mistake taking Fultz one, and it turned out they did. And Tatum had more juice behind his name than Williams, but Tatum was still kind of a mystery. And Tatum turned out to be an amazing player, so maybe Williams can follow along that path.
All right, let's get to some Ducks as we talk with Aaron Fentress. What? Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Eye on that offensive line. I know how raw this group is. But in both games, I saw a unit that just improved as the game moved along, and they finished really strong. What do you make of how the big guys up front are playing and maybe how good they can become?
Yeah, it's definitely a good group, man. There's some physicality, some athleticism, some tenacity. You know, I definitely was a big question with losing four of them. And then when Panay went out, I was like, oh, that's kind of tough to replace five. I think they're on track. I'm not going to give them, you know, the clean bill of, you know, sale yet. Clean bill of health has been great yet, or whatever I'm trying to say, I don't know. But until I see them do well against better competition, you know, Washington State and where Stanford is right now as a program, you know, they weren't providing a ton of dynamic resistance that you have to worry about. That said, like, I love some of the execution that they're pulling off. I kind of detailed some of that in my film review that ran Monday. Some of the plays, they were, there were a ton during the game. But if you just go back and watch that last run by Dye to ice it, to get down to the one to ice it, blocking on that and some of the degree of difficulty for some of them to have to get inside of guys 2 or 3 yards inside of them, and then what Big Sala did to the defensive end was just criminal. I'm surprised they let him leave the state. But they're getting it done from a technical standpoint in a lot of different areas. And it's just some of the stuff is just fun to watch. Like they ran a play, like the play when Shuck basically ran a QB sweep right, okay? He fakes the swing to Verdell and runs right. And you had the right tackle and tight end, Johnson. Johnson's blocking well, by the way, too. Those two blocked down, and then the right guard, I think it was Bass. And I can't remember who it was, right guard.
Yeah, it was. He got the lineman of the week.
And then Forsythe, the center, is pulling around. And, too, whenever you see people running any play with a center pull, that there's a high degree of difficulty to that. You have to have confidence that guy can make the snap and then get in position to pull. And he did it effortlessly. It's just a beautiful play to watch from an offensive line standpoint. And there were several of those in that game. So I like where they are offensive line-wise. I want to see it against better teams. But as of right now, I feel pretty confident that they're going to be moving forward really well. And the only guy they're going to lose, I believe, going to next year is George Moore. So that bodes well as well.
And lastly, one more Rotten Tomatoes review from the Fentress Film Room. The human wrecking crew, Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously when Cumberlander got injured last year, his presence was a little more accelerated. You said you broke down two plays of his. What were the ones that kind of jumped off the tape?
Yeah, the two that jumped off the most that I included in my top 10. And what I was trying to do is not, you know, obviously Travis Dodge was a touchdown, yay, Red catches a deep ball, yay, but it's what the intricacies within plays like that as well is what I'm looking at. And so, you know, one thing about Kayvon, he doesn't have any sacks yet, which is irritating because I predicted he'd get 10. So right now he's not making it look good. I don't like that, Kayvon, wherever you are, pick up the sack total. But he made two plays that were just amazingly impressive. One, he's got the right tackle. He's got him blocked pretty well, and the guard had Panay Sewell blocked pretty well, and the back has a lane. And then while Kayvon's engaged with the tackle, he reaches out with his right arm and just grabs the running back. Like me, you know, grabbing my six-year-old when he was about to run into the street or something like that. You know? Like, he just reached out, just grabs him, then comes off the blocker and tackles him. It's like, that's just a fantastic tackle. And then the other one, they trapped him. The whole offensive line set the right tackle blocked to the right. The right tackle pulled to trap Kayvon and had a good angle on him. And so Kayvon just went under, dude. I wow. called it a submarine tackle. He goes under his legs to get to the running back behind him. And it's just like, I mean, that's just effort. Like, it would be so easy to just take on the block and then try and get off the block and go get the back. And McIntosh is a pretty good player. But he just found a way. And the way was to go under the guy's leg to get to the running back. So just two impressive plays by him. But still, I need some sacks.
All right, I'll get on him for that. Yeah, it's a cliche, but his motor is just like always running.
Oh, man, he's coming, dude. He's trying to do damage on every play. It's fun to watch. And I'm going to do a film breakdown on Noah. I didn't get to it this week because of the draft, but I'm going to get some more film for this week. That kid, yep. Noah Sewell, oh, my goodness. He is going to be the best Oregon linebacker in a long, 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 long time.
No, it's crazy to think he's played a whole eight quarters. And
I know. It's ridiculous.
All right, folks. So, yeah, check out the film room on Aaron's Twitter handle, at Aaron J. Fentress. It's dated Monday, top 10 plays on film. And, of course, catch what he's up to on the Oregonian. And, of course, every Thursday, more importantly, on this radio program. All right. Right. Fun stuff as always. Be well, be safe. Catch up next week.
All right, take care, man.
All right.